It's time now for the Sports Objective Podcast. No talking heads, just guys who love sports. Here's Dave Richmond.
Welcome into the Sports Objective. Big night tonight, as always. We're glad to be here on Facebook Live and on live on our YouTube channel. Bubba Rosenbaum, how are you?
I'm doing well, guys. How are y'all?
Kyle from LaGrange. Barber, how are you, man?
What's going on, Dave? Bubba?
Well, Kyle and Bubba, very excited to have our first guest of the evening. In fact, Bubba, we've got two great guests.
Yeah, we do.
And let's go ahead and announce those right now.
I apologize. Sorry about that, Dave. I had a little bit of a lag there. Of course, as you see there on the bottom right corner of your screen, Eric Ward, the Director of Athletic Marketing and Fan Engagement for the last 3.5 years at East Carolina. And Pirate football is quickly approaching, a little over 2 months away, so we'll talk a variety of topics now with Eric, and then in the second half hour, we will catch up with Francisco Cabrera. If you're a longtime baseball fan, or especially a Braves fan, you'll remember Francisco got that single to left field that plated Sid Breen back in the 1992 National League Championship Series.
Great stuff there. Can't wait to talk to Francisco. Probably our longest distance guest we've ever had, maybe except for Musa. Musa, I think, from France, maybe the longest distance. But Francisco is right up there with being in the Dominican. Can't wait to have him on. But very excited to have Eric on right now, Eric Ward. First time on the podcast and debut. Thank you so much for coming on tonight.
I appreciate it. Highlight of my day for sure. So thank you very much for having me.
No doubt. We're glad to have you. In fact, I know you just told us right before we came on, not much movement there in season tickets, but while fans are watching, I guess you can tell, can you give us any kind of update?
Yeah, so we surpassed the 10,000 season ticket number. If you guys will remember, we had a goal of right around 16,000 pre-COVID-19. The goal was reduced to 10,000, which I thought was a very fair goal. Pirate Nation certainly really stepped up. We were kind of hoping to get around 7,500, 8,000 tickets prior the priority deadline and actually surpass the 10,000 with the mail-ins right at the priority deadline. So might be a little bit slow right now, but that's obviously because a lot of people just got their tickets in. But this will pick up basically every single day between now and kickoff. More and more tickets will be sold. So we got a long ways to go, but very exciting to get over 10,000 season tickets already.
Eric, what's the talk, man? I know you guys got to be speculating amongst yourselves and other universities in the state. What are we expecting to see in terms of limited capacity, 50%, 75%, or no clue at all?
Kyle, that's a great question. We take directives straight from the governor's office. So I've talked to my peers at schools around the state and actually peers in the conference and friends all around the country. And we're really all kind of in the same wait and see mode. You know, I personally am preparing for, hey, we're going to have 100% of fans. Maybe we're going to have 75%. Maybe it's going to be 50. Maybe it's going to be none. I have no idea. But we have to be prepared in, you know, what, 9-10 weeks to kick off and do whatever it is and keep Pirate football, you know, the best it can be, regardless of the circumstances. So we are preparing for all outcomes right now.
And I assume,
go ahead.
And I was just going to add to that. I assume that right now we're going to say that the season will start week zero, August 29th against Marshall. We have to plan for, I try to tell people all the time, we have to plan for August 29th. And if it's moved back, it's moved back. But right now we have to plan for August 29th. If not, you're not going to be prepared.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, I have not talked to a single one of my peers in the industry across the entire country that is not anticipating starting right there at the beginning of the season as scheduled. You know, I don't think anybody really thinks that's the move at this point. I mean, it seems like the earlier the better. So I'm excited for us to have a week zero game in Greenville, should that be the case.
And just to confirm, yeah, as you were speculating, we would play if governor says no fans, we would go ahead with the season with no fans.
Yeah, I don't think that there at this point in time is, you know, a very reasonable circumstance where there would be no games. But at the end of the day, this is a very fluid situation that we have no clue what's going to happen between now and that date. You know, I think it's a very encouraging sign. Our players have started coming back in waves. You know, the NCAA passed that and allowed players, I believe they're all on campus now. I believe the last players came in maybe at the end of last week or beginning of this week. So they're in different workout groups, you know, four or five different groups, much smaller than normal. I know some of the guys have been working, well, really all of them have been working super hard in strength and conditioning which, I mean, if you guys, you know, have seen how amazing our weight room is, I can't believe they've had to go from that to figuring out what they're doing. But at the same time, everybody in the country is dealing with the same thing. So I'm very appreciative of our strength and conditioning staff for everything they've done during this whole thing.
And I know as far as the players are concerned, Big John, he put some through the ringer, so they probably are glad to have a break.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I talked to Holton. We did a video shoot with them. We had a couple videos we put out when we launched the One Pirate Nation, and got a chance to talk to Holton, and he was like, "Yeah, we've been sore pretty much every day. So they've been working their butts off this offseason."
Now, Eric, before we dive into more East Carolina topics, and take a look at what you do for the Pirates, just tell folks, for folks that haven't heard interviews with you in the past and aren't familiar with what you do and who you are, and just talk about, I know you're a 2012 South Carolina alum and have a degree, obviously, in sports marketing, entertainment. But after graduating from South Carolina, you spent time there as an intern and also as an assistant, but then also spent time at Texas Tech. So tell people about your background, because I know in Lubbock, you initially worked with the baseball program, and then also, right, what was it, maybe soccer, and then after that, more so with football and men's basketball.
Yeah, so I grew up on, you guys may know, Danville, Virginia, right there on the Virginia-North Carolina border. That's my hometown. I went to South Carolina strictly for the sport management degree, and it was really fun at the time because South Carolina, while being an SEC program, was very much at the bottom of the SEC, and so our marketing department only had 4 full-time staff members. So my entire undergrad, I got to work in a department that's smaller than what we have here today, and got a lot of responsibility with the baseball program. If you guys remember about 10 years ago, they were really, really good, won championships, and that's kind of what ended up getting me the job out at Texas Tech. I worked actually with Coach Tubby Smith his first season with basketball out there, and Texas Tech was not very good at basketball, and so they kind of shoved me on that role, and then obviously the program's got better and better since. But at the time, I was dating a girl who is now my wife, and she was still living in South Carolina, and I got a call from East Carolina about coming, and this is obviously much closer to home for me. So it's been a blast, but I've gotten a chance to work with a lot of different great coaches. Well, it did work the entire time at Texas Tech with the baseball program. I certainly was there during the Super Regional that year, which was just a really amazing 3-game series. It's a shame somebody had to lose it, but, you know, I've been working with all the different sports here the last 2 years, kind of heading up the marketing department. So right now I'm with primarily football and baseball, but my team obviously oversees all the different sports.
We had comments throughout the evening for for Eric Ward, but also for Francisco Cabrera, the great Braves legend. We'll have him the second half hour. Johnny Gardner, a great Pirate, Eric says, have we as an athletic department actually reached out to ESPN about game day coming to Marshall, coming to town to Greenville for the Marshall game?
That's a great question. My understanding is that with the conversations, the reason we moved the game with Marshall, obviously due to the historic nature of the series and it being the 50th anniversary, ESPN's well aware of that, and that was a primary reason for moving it up. I honestly do not know if John Gilbert has reached out to them. I would imagine those conversations have taken place. Who knows what College Game Day's plan is this year, but you know, you got to think. I mean, if you look at the schedule for that week, as I'm sure we all have, every game is, what, Arizona and West besides us? So logically, it would make sense if that was something that, you know, made sense for East Carolina and made sense for ESPN. Man, I would love to have College Game Day. I've been a part of that twice, and it is a blast. I would love to have them here.
It definitely would be definitely fitting with the Marshall game and the 50th anniversary of the plane crash, the two schools, certainly week zero. I can't imagine. It would be a lot more fun to have it in Greenville. I'm biased, but there than the studio. And no offense to the people in Bristol at ESPN. We love ESPN, but certainly I think it would be more fun on location than
they need to understand what a Pirate game day is like. You know, that's what I'm saying. Like, they need to come here and see that. I mean, it was funny when we had, when we first announced the sports were cut, which was obviously a terrible day. One of the first things that popped in my head was, you know what? We're going to be the first college game after this whole thing, which is really cool to think about that, you know, 6 months without college sports. And assuming we're kicking off August 29th, we're going to be what brings college sports back. That's awesome.
Quite frankly, Eric, you've been here since 2016. You need to find out what a Pirate game day is like. We ain't had one since you've been here. Hopefully we'll get back to it. But how difficult does COVID-19 make your job, man, with marketing and trying to come up with new gimmicks and ways to market ECU during COVID-19 and coming up with, you know, things you're going to do in game during the season. I mean, do you just plan? I mean, you got to take that into account. I mean, do you just go ahead as if it doesn't exist?
No, that's a great question. You know, I always use the analogy, you know, we basically have a 45-hour week desk job, and then we work another 20 or 25 hours in events. So without the events, you know, we're really working 40, 50 hours a week, and it's strictly for planning. So I think, you know, we've gotten a lot of opportunities to kind of be creative and get outside the box in the ways we're doing, you know, some of the things on social media. Obviously, you guys have probably followed along with the Rewind series. You saw what we did with the baseball, you know, virtual games. So that's all been fun. But obviously, our focus now is beyond the COVID-19 stuff and really focusing on looking ahead to the fall, because we want to make sure that, you know, we're building the excitement appropriately. My favorite part of this whole summer is now that the players coming back, we're going to start to get more and more access to them and to be able to use them and do, you know, the fun things on social media you would see as if it was a normal season, which, you know, that's what we're planning for. As far as the game day planning, you know, I don't really know. I mean, I've been in contact with the U.S. Army about doing a game ball drop again this year, and, you know, the homecoming committee on campus, our bases around for the military game. I mean, I'm planning as if things are normal, but I'm also planning backups and, hey, maybe we won't have these things. So what can we do on game days to provide that experience to fans that may not attend games, may not want to attend games this year? So we're trying to figure out creatively what we can do there to maximize the experience for people who may not be able to make it this year.
Eric, one question that came to mind. I know that one of our conference mates in Memphis, I think it was last week, the guys posted on our Facebook page that Memphis is not going to have any single game tickets that they're going to be selling. Is that something that East Carolina has considered? That, in other words, we're trying to help you with season ticket sales going up even more. But is that something you guys have entertained, the idea of not selling single game tickets and season tickets only?
Yeah, I actually thought about that. I mentioned that to Ryan Robinson, because I did see some schools have been doing that. And when Ryan and I were talking, he actually seemed to indicate that, you know, at the time we spoke, which was a week and a half ago, that we would be putting single game tickets on sale. You know, if you guys are familiar with it, obviously we normally don't put those on until 3 or 4 weeks before the season anyway, just because you try to maximize, you know, season ticket sales and give the best seats possible to people who do have season tickets. So I wouldn't imagine that timeline changing. You know, I do think about, you know, schools like Michigan that, you know, sell 110,000 tickets every single game. And if you have a, let's just say, 50% capacity, it's going to be interesting for them. How do you determine, you know, who are the 55,000 fans that aren't going to be at games? I don't really know. You know, Brian Medor, you guys have had on the show, but he's made some jokes. He said, man, ECU's so well aware of social distancing these last few years, we're going to be just fine. So
exactly.
it's not a good thing, but, you know, we do appreciate all the fans that have been coming out through some tough times, and things are just going to get better and better.
Yeah, and actually, Dave, I wanted to mention about the Memphis only doing season ticket sales. We shared that on our social media page, encouraging East Carolina fans to buy tickets. You know, hey, look, this is what Memphis is doing. And I actually, Dave, received some negative feedback about Memphis doing that from a couple people. So maybe it's a good thing we didn't do that.
That's interesting. Yeah, I mean, I do appreciate that. I mean, as you guys know, obviously our financial situation hadn't been great the last few years, and we're trying to climb out of that. So, every season ticket really matters, every donation to Pirate Club. So I really genuinely appreciate you guys' help with that.
Yeah. And we got a question from Bubba Gallagher. What are you doing for past players, alumni, to get more involvement?
Great question. Coach Houston, in my very first meeting with him, he was dead set. Like, the first question he asked me was, what can we do to alumni? And I thought it was the most, like, profound example of, like, this is what this coach is all about. You know, he's never worked here before, but his first thought is, what can I do for the alumni? They've completely changed the alumni game day. They have, I believe, a different facility they have over in the Hall of Fame. They have reception on game days. They have a lot of field access, which obviously could be different this year. But, you know, that's all handled through the football office. Our involvement with alumni is in the Hall of Fame game and the alumni weekend, where we have the former student athletes from all different sports. Last year, we actually changed that up, because one of the bits of feedback I'd gotten from 2 years ago was alumni said, we feel very rushed. You know, we run on the field, we run off. So we actually did kind of a parade of sorts. I don't know if you guys remember that last year, but they actually got to do a whole lap around the field. And the alumni I talked to loved it, because they got like 15 minutes on the field. They got to wave to all the fans. They actually felt like they were important and not just kind of shoved in the end zone and taken out. you know, I just think it's profound, though, Coach Houston and his staff, you know, again, who have not been here, well, at least Coach Houston has not, care about that. But, you know, you get Donnie back, and that really makes a difference. And so, you know, I think that it's important for our alumni to feel welcome back to the football program. And I know for a fact that they'll take those calls, and they want the alumni to be around the program as much as possible.
Eric, I'm gonna piggyback on that. We did a watch party with the 95 Liberty Bowl team that beat Stanford and finished ranked 23rd in the nation. And had several former members of that team on. And they talked about feeling forgotten by the university. We've had several former players say that over the years, but particularly that team, how they, you know, everybody talks about the 91 Peach Bowl team, and everybody talks about the Conference USA champion teams in 08 and 09 as well as they should. But the kind of guys from that era in particular, along with some other guys like the 78 team and the 83 team, but the 95 team was particularly talk about feeling forgotten. And this is the 25th anniversary of that Liberty Bowl win. So it'd be pretty cool if the university could honor that team somehow at one of the football games.
Kyle, that's a great idea. And, you know, I will say, I grew up a college football fan, but being able to watch these EC rewinds every week has been awesome for me, just educating myself on the history of the program, you know, 25 years ago. I had not seen the Peach Bowl. In fact, I talked to a lot of people who'd never seen the Peach Bowl. We all hear about it, but actually getting to watch that was one of the coolest experiences I've had since I've been here. And just seeing how dominant that team was and, you know, the comeback. I mean, I was getting goosebumps, and I'm like, man, I want to see this. So that's really cool to know, Kyle. And actually, I'm going to put that in my notes as soon as we finish up here and figure out something to do with that.
Yeah, that's the 95 Liberty Bowl team, not the Peach Bowl team.
No, I know. 25 years ago. That's cool.
Yeah, there's a lot of – Eric, there are a lot of players. That's one of the reasons why we started this podcast, was to give a platform for former players. Certainly, there's many, many players. There's many different teams, obviously, with the Pirate Athletic Program. And for the football players to say – time and time again, they feel forgotten over and over again. I'm hoping there's something special we can do with the spring game. I'm hoping that – I know that's something that we're trying to as a university to improve, but that's one thing. I'm hoping we get a whole bunch of football players to, you know, to come back and have a reason, I guess, to feel welcome to come back.
That's really good to know.
Yeah, so as far as I know with we're talking about tickets and the football, is there any kind – I know we're talking about a fluid situation with COVID-19, working with it daily – is there any kind of procedures that are going to be in place as far as maybe fans should come earlier to the game because we're going to have, you know, temperature checks or wearing a mask? I know things are going to be they're probably a last-minute decision because it's going to be August before we'll know more things. But is there talks now on how we can handle game day as far as getting the fans in there as fast as we can but at the same time being safe?
Yeah, we actually have a meeting after, I guess, the next week would be July 4th, the week after that, to discuss all these things, because I think we're kind of at a point where we can't exactly wait for directives much longer. You guys might have seen the university announced a report yesterday about, you know, student procedures on campus, which I do believe included, you know, masks for all students, you know, basically in public spaces. I would assume that would extend to the game days. I've not been in any conversations about that. But I can just tell you that reading that, I was a little bit surprised. And so I would imagine those conversations have taken place, but they have not involved me. So I do know we have a game day fan experience meeting in 2 weeks where a lot of these items will be discussed. And certainly as soon as things are, you know, determined and finalized, those will be communicated across all channels. Because I have to imagine, no matter what, to your exact point, there's probably not going to be the most normal football season. You know, there might be a few inconveniences here and there, but, you know, we're all going to get together and have a good time with the Pirates. And, you know, I just hope we can figure out what those things are quickly and educate as much as possible, similar to what we did with the clear bags last year, which I was alarmed at how – not alarmed, but shocked at how smooth that went, because I've been through two schools that implemented that, and it was a disaster. And Pirate fans are apparently smarter than everybody else, and they just figured it out and did their whole thing. So – whatever it may be this year, I hope that's the exact same case.
Yeah, the mask thing to me, I'm curious about for game day, because if you got an 8 o'clock kickoff or a 6 o'clock kickoff or 7 o'clock kickoff in August and September, it's not a problem. But if you're playing an afternoon game and you got to wear a mask and it's 85, 90 degrees, that could be problematic. And then, you know, what are the rules going to be? And I mean, I just obviously you don't know, but, you know, if you're drinking or eating, you know, you're going to have to be able to take your mask off. If that's the case, I'm just going to drink the whole damn game.
Hey, we do have alcohol sales now, so.
I didn't even mean alcohol. I just means I wouldn't have to wear a mask. Just drink the Powerade.
Yeah, I honestly, when I read that report yesterday, I wasn't surprised by it, but, you know, it is something that, you know, I assumed something that was coming. And one of the things I'm taking a look at, because I've talked to my peers in the American Athletic Conference, is field access to games. And, I assume there's going to be some sort of restrictions in regards to that. And I don't know what that may be, but I'm planning as if, you know, hey, I'm not going to be able to put, you know, 500 band kids from high schools out on the field because, I mean, you know, the access with our players and each other, I mean, I just don't know. So it's a very interesting time, you know, and I'm glad we have the leadership we have right now where, you know, they're talking about these things and there's a lot more communication than we used to have. So I appreciate that.
Yeah, Diane Pons, as I just put up, she had an article earlier she commented on and put up about collegemarching.com, I guess, AAC band sidelines for 2020. So I just put that up on the screen for folks. But as far as the game day, I know one thing that we want to talk to you about is Kyle and I love music. I know that that's something that Kyle loves at the stadium. So I was wondering, is there any changes to the music? Is there anything we can look forward to? That's one of the things that we love about the game day experience.
Yeah. So we had a 2-year partnership with Still Life that our IMG Learfield folks sold a couple years ago. That expired. I'm talking with Megan Henschen, who of course has been a loyal Pirate for a long time with IMG Learfield, about what our options are there, whether they're going to renew with Still Life or if we're going to try to find a different situation. But, you know, we're not going to go back to it the way it was before where there was no DJ, just because the role of a game day producer, which is what I'm doing, should never be the person who's playing music. Number one, really, you shouldn't be the person that's the expert at that, even if you think you are. But number two, there's a million things going on. I mean, on a game day, I have 2 headsets on. I'm timing stuff my phone. I mean, every timeout's a different length. I'm coordinating with the band, cheer, dance, video board, Morgan Ayler's. I mean, there's a lot going on. It's, you know, it's silly that prior to that, you know, somebody was doing that by, you know, those roles together. So we are looking for a DJ, hoping we can renew that. But if not, then we will certainly be able to find somebody who is a talented DJ to fill that role.
Yeah. And can I make a request, whether it's,
yes, sir,
it's a Still Life or anybody else? Play a bigger variety of music and quit putting a dance beat behind every damn song.
AC/DC.
I don't need to hear AC/DC with a dance beat in it. Let's just play AC/DC. I mean, I'm not trying to. And I appreciate the Still Life, you know, having the contract with IMG in East Carolina. But, oh my God, it makes my head hurt.
He's an outlaw country guy. So, and that's the one thing that I've pointed out, Eric, is you have a tough job because under normal conditions before COVID, I know we've had some tough seasons, but I was trying to explain to the guys, as a guy that is a DJ, you got 51,000 potential opinions on music. Not to be a cop out, but I think that's really difficult when you have the kids that are a few years old all the way up to maybe people in their 80s or maybe even 90s. I don't know, but there's a big, big, wide variety of people, music interests that come to the stadium on game day.
Yeah, no doubt. It's tough to strike that balance. You know, I always try to take lead from the coaching staff. And so one of the things I do appreciate, Mike Houston is huge, like metalhead. Like he loves like old school rock, and I love it. So it's funny. We have a part in the game. I want to say it's like 55 minutes before the game where we play Don't Stop Believing every game because he wants that. He's like, man, that gets me fired up. So we're like, we will play for you. So, you know, Mike Houston, I mean, he's really awesome. But it is funny. I'll give you guys a quick story when it comes to music, not just the music itself, but the audio levels. If you guys are obviously very familiar with Dottie Ficklin, all our speakers are housed in the scoreboard. So where you're sitting at the stadium, it's going to be very different, you know, audio-wise. And my first game in the game day producer role 2 years ago, which was the A&T disaster, we got 14 – I had 14 phone calls after the game from fans. 7 of them were complaining it was too loud, and 7 of them were complaining it was not loud enough. So – that's just kind of speaks to how that role goes sometimes. But I always appreciate the feedback. So, Kyle, we'll make sure to play some AC/DC and not put beats behind everything.
Yeah, just have a variety. You know, bigger variety. You don't have to put a dance beat behind everything. And the fact that 14 people called you about the audio after that A&T game, my God, didn't they have other things to be more concerned about?
You know, sometimes you want to say that, but at the same time, everybody's entitled to their opinion. And, you know, I certainly understand people being frustrated. You know, it was a tough 36 hours for all of us. We shared that wonderful memory together, didn't we?
One request I have, as far as I know that we have, I know everybody has a cell phone now. Can we put more scores from other games up more? It seems like there's, I know in the fourth quarter, there's different times, and I know there's a lot of sponsorships and there's a lot of things that we have to do inside the game, but that's one thing that I would like to see. I know that when people around me, there, some people are like hard old school and they don't even pay attention to their phone. And so they're like, do you know the score of this game or that game? And I know that we're at the Pirate game, but that's one thing I'm hoping to see that we can bring back and have that more.
Yeah. The bottom left wing of the scoreboard, I believe, has a rotating score.
Yeah.
So I don't know where that FTP pulls from. I can definitely take a look at that, but that should be all D1 games. One of the things, my dream, and I know we're just not technically capable of doing this right now, but my dream is to be able to play like a couple of highlights from other games, you know, like you would see as if you're watching a broadcast at home and like as you're coming into or out of a timeout, like, hey, here's what's going on, X, Y, Z. But you know, we're not set up to do that right now. That would be awesome if we could.
At what point do you think we're going to update that video board? It's funny. It's been there now since 2010.
Yeah.
It was outdated. It's 10 years old. I mean, is that something I remember previously? I believe IMG, and it may even have been called ISP or something else back then.
It was ISP.
I believe they helped us get that board, if I remember right. I mean, is that something that we can get help from those guys again, being they're going to sell advertisement on it? Or?
Yeah, I think that's something that we're all on the same page that it's got to be replaced. But in the grand scheme of things, unfortunately, there's just more pressing issues with our financial situation. So I don't imagine that'll be on the immediate docket, but I don't think it'll be too far off before it gets done. You know, I know Coach Houston, of course, as you guys have seen, you know, certainly wants his indoor practice facility at some point in the near future. But, you know, he understands that there's a lot of other things going on now. I mean, our focus right now is filling the general scholarship fund and making sure we can fund all of our scholarships and, you know, the basic functions of the athletic department. So, you know, hopefully that's something that comes in the near future. And, you know, like I said, when we had such an incredible, Pirate Club had over $1 million in donations in the month of June prior to the priority deadline. I mean, Pirate Nation really stepped up. So if we can kind of keep on this track, then things are just going to continue to get better and better. And shoot, I'm just excited August 29th to kick the ball off.
Eric, have you heard, speaking of the Pirate Club, we have some people asking comments here, but I know that you don't have anything really to do with that. Ryan does right now. Susan Francis asks, is there anything to recognize Pirate Club reps? They seem to have forgotten us.
Yeah, Pirate Club Day is, I believe, the Marshall game. I'd have to confirm that with the Pirate Club staff. Typically, they plan the majority of the activities around that game, but I do know we will have a Pirate Club Day this year. I don't know exactly what that will entail. But certainly always great. And I think you guys might've seen, but the Pirate Club executive director position was posted recently, which I'm personally very excited to be able to, you know, have somebody on board with that. And, you know, it's a very critical position in our athletic department. So I'm very confident whoever gets hired is going to do a wonderful job. So I'm looking forward to meeting that person, planning out a Pirate Club day and making it awesome.
Do we have a timeline on when, that's something I hear, like a man on the street question, where we're going to have a Pirate Club director?
No, I mean, I actually read the job posting. I don't know if you guys saw it, but I mean, it was a pretty standard, you know, 3 or 4 weeks and somebody's going to be interviewed or several people be interviewed and they get hired. So I would assume before football season, if not, you know, in the coming weeks, but no, I don't know for sure when that would be, but that would be a really, really awesome person to have on board that I'm very excited to work with because, you know, Phil Wood, he was very good to us. He worked well with us. I did not work very much with Jay Batt, but, you know, Ryan Robinson has filled that role for 6 months now, and I'm sure he's excited to be focusing just on the external part sooner rather than later. So he's done an amazing job doing that.
Eric, and one more question for me here, and this is more of a question for John Gilbert, but I don't have John on, so I'll ask you. are we going to have a volleyball coach, or should I, like, you know, see if I can get ready to come up?
Yeah, I don't know. We work on whenever there's a coaching change, we do a booklet. And so that goes to essentially candidates and we've completed that. So I'm assuming that the hiring process is ongoing right now. So I would not imagine that would be a very long time before that person is hired.
Okay.
So you better get your suit dry cleaned, Kyle, if you and get it ready.
better call John and put your application in.
I'll do it.
We want to make sure people work really hard, Eric, at the ticket office and make you guys sweat as far as selling tickets. How can people get in contact with you as far as season tickets? I know you said single game tickets will be August maybe, but how can they get into contact with you guys?
Yeah, 1-800-DIAL-ECU or ecupirates.com. So it's a big ticket button right there at the top of the page, and that'll get you taken care of. And we're actually working on our website to make it even easier to get your tickets. So in the coming days, you will see that on our website.
Hey, all right, Bubba, did you have some questions?
Yeah, I have a couple of questions. Before I ask those questions, I had a follow-up comment regarding what Susan Francis asked about the Pirate Club weekend. I've been a Pirate Club rep for several years now, and like Eric's saying, they honored the Pirate Club reps and chapter directors and so forth at halftime. I've been down there a time or two for that. A lot of times I won't go just because I don't want to miss the ball game, being late, getting back up to my seat. But they do that if you're interested in that, Susan. But my question, a couple questions about our game day. One, just, and you already did this a little bit, but maybe go into a little more detail, just the challenge of coordinating everything. There are so many moving parts in terms of the music, the ads, Purple Haze, the Marching Pirates pregame show, halftime, et cetera. So just talk about all those things and how that comes together. One of the things that I really like about Purple Haze here in the last 2 or 3 years, the team has just run through the band instead of, instead of coming out into the end zone and standing around like a high school team. I think that's been an improvement.
Man, Bubba, you're singing my tune right there, man. That was one of the things we took a look at, and we said, I think it's really cool when you have a rough and he's hyping up the players and stuff. I bet that was probably really, really neat. We really want to just run the team out on the field. And there's something to be said for that sprint out of the skull head through the Purple Haze and just getting people fired up. And that is pretty special. But to your question, I script out the majority of games. I mean, I probably have about 90% of what I'm theorizing the season would look like done now. Obviously things change, but on a typical game day, I'm at the stadium for, if it's a night game, I'm there for 15, 16 hours. But I have a headset on one ear that goes to the video board staff, our DJ, our audio tech. And then I have another one that goes to our team on the field that does all the promotions and presentations, the band, the cheer, and the dance team. Every timeout is to the second. We obviously try to leave some wiggle room and some breathing room, but certainly, as you guys know, we have quite a few ads that go into the game. So my job is to figure out where those go. And that's not always the easiest thing, but it's certainly a very necessary deal. But there is nothing like that last time out of the game, getting through the final bit of it and then just being able to relax a little bit. And then, a game, you don't know when teams are going to score. So I think that's one of the things that people don't understand is I have to make changes on the fly all the time because I'm not going to sit here and run a, dull commercial after we just scored a touchdown. So I might have to make changes on the fly. So a typical game day script's about 110 pages of stuff, and I got to figure out where that goes. And one thing that is the hardest deal to work with is when you have an injury on the field, because your first concern is for the student athlete. But then the immediate concern is, well, how long is this injury going to be? Because we got to figure out, when are we going to be able to fit this ad in? Is this something that's just a stinger? We know they're going to pop up, or is it very serious? Can we bump something to the next timeout? It's a hassle. Sometimes I like going and just watching games because of that. But, my job is to make it so that people don't know these things, and it's very fluid. And, nothing gets me fired up like the Purple Haze and the no quarter and those moments. So, that's why I do this. And so the opportunity to be part of that is awesome. And I want one last thing with that. There will be a drawing that – I believe the Pirate Club did. They asked me if we could do some different things, game day experiences. And I think one of them that I approved that they did go with this year was for somebody to push play on Purple Haze. So we will have a member of the Pirate Club that's actually going to get to do that this year, which I've seen several schools do something like that. But I think that's going to be a really neat experience for them and their family.
Do you ever feel stupid when we're getting blown out which didn't happen under Mike Houston very much this year, thank God. When we're getting blown out and we're doing the no quarter thing, it makes me want to throw up.
Kyle, let me just answer that with jobs are much easier when teams are winning. So, that's a tricky subject. And, you know, I know that that was a polled thing for a lot of fans. And, you know, the last few years, I think, are the outlier more than the norm. And it's tough when you see that. But I also think you shouldn't abandon traditions. And I will be honest, I do think it's something that, you know, looks a little silly. And it's something we've discussed ad nauseum. But at the same time, if this is a tradition of ours, then we need to keep it. And I think that, again, it's the outlier rather than the norm. And I'm very excited for when they're kicking teams' tails, you know, going into the fourth quarter, game in and game out, and, you know, seeing that. And that the TIFO the last few years, unfortunately, was really awful time, and that was prior to my time. But that's going to be really cool when we have full student sections every game.
Eric, and specifically about Purple Haze and the entrance video, which Pirate Nation's obviously always looking forward to when that's unveiled. Curtis Thiemann with Port City Films, we've had him on the program a few times now, and just talking about the intro. So tell folks how that's going to be handled this year.
Yep. First of all, Curtis Thiemann is maybe the most loyal pirate possible. I mean, this guy has donated literally tens of thousands of dollars to the university and his abilities. And every ECU fan should know who Curtis Thiemann is because of what he has done. You know, you've seen, we've had some good intro videos in the past. We've had some very bad intro videos in the past, but Curtis Thiemann is always going to be able to deliver a very good one. He may not do it forever, but as long as he is, then it's going to be great. Curtis will be doing the intro video again this year. In fact, he is actually working with us to do basically for free. That is how great of a pirate Curtis is, understanding the situation we're in. We were on a call last week. We're doing a video shoot next Wednesday for the intro video. It will be a very similar theme to the last couple of years, which, you know, we're going to look to tweak some things. We will be bringing the poem back this year, Ghost on the Wind in the video, because I think personally that's very important, and I like seeing that. So I think it'll be very similar to the last couple of years, but some slight tweaks, and obviously we're going to have, you know, current players throughout the video.
Can I make another suggestion? Can Kyle run out with the team one game?
Yeah.
Anywhere, Dave. If I'm running, y'all call 911 because something is chasing my ass. I ain't running nowhere. I'm telling you.
Absolutely.
Well, Eric, thank you so much for your time. And again, can you plug one more time for how people get season tickets? We're trying really hard. We're giving away a pair of, I don't know if you know this, we're giving away a pair of tickets for the Fan Zone. In fact, the end of this month on the 30th, is that next week? Wow, time is flying. So how can people get season tickets?
Great to know. 1-800-DIAL-ECU or ecupirates.com and click the tickets button right at the top of the page.
Thanks very much. The time went by very fast, and thanks for spending some extra time with us. And looking forward to August 29th as we take on Marshall, and hopefully we can beat them.
Anytime. Appreciate it, guys. Thanks so much.
All right. Enjoyed it. All right, bye-bye. All right, that's Eric Ward. Great guys. That was a lot of fun having him on. Love to have him back on maybe. And now, speaking of fun, we're going to have a lot of fun now as we bring in a very special guest. Right, Bubba?
Yeah, welcome into the program, Francisco Cabrera. Francisco played in a variety of roles for the Atlanta Braves in the late 80s or early 90s. And very excited to have him on the program because I'm a huge Braves fan, as I see that we've apparently had some technical difficulties with Francisco as he's joining the program now. But, we actually talked to him, Kyle, prior to having Eric on, so we know it's working. But Francisco, if you're a longtime baseball fan, specifically an Atlanta Braves fan like I am, you remember back in 1992 in October when Francisco delivered the single to left field to score Sid Bream from second base and send the Braves to the World Series that year. It's going to be an honor, hopefully, to have this guy on the program if technology will cooperate here.
He actually, the irony for this whole thing is he was with us the entire, virtually the entire Eric Ward interview, and we come to him and now it's wonderful. If we can get the folks at StreamYard that work with us, we'll have to see if we can get technical folks on to help us out because There we go. So maybe Bubba, you can
Francisco, if you can hear us, I don't know, maybe restart your device, your computer or your smartphone or your tablet. Maybe that'll help.
Yeah, maybe. For sure. Wanted to we have some, obviously, while we're waiting on him, Kyle, I know there's been some great I'll see if I can change the No, that's not good. I'll keep trying here. Bubba can help me.
Good job, Dave. Good job. Just leave it as it is. It's fine.
Yeah, it is what it is. We can talk, obviously, one of the things that I've been following, as you guys know, is we were getting ready to have Francisco on. The Major League Baseball situation has been a disaster. What's that?
Looks like they're going to play.
They are, but both the owners and the players can file a grievance, and also we may have a 60-game season. You better watch baseball, because guess what? As Brett Boone, we had on recently, a former baseball player, Major League Baseball player, and his family has been a part of baseball forever, a few generations. Next year, Kyle, we could have a strike. Did you know that?
Well, yeah, I know. But they just need to get through this season. People need baseball right now. They need some kind of distraction, particularly if we don't get college football, then I'm definitely going to need MLB. So they have an opportunity right now to really grab some people, that are dying for sports. So the sooner they can get back, the better. And I actually like the appeal, and I think what they're going to find out, if people don't get so pissed off because of the contract negotiations, I think they're going to find out that people, the average person, the reason they love football so much is because every game means so much. And I think they're going to find out a 60-game season is going to be more appealing to the average person than a full season in 2020. I think more people are going to actually get into it because it is a shorter season.
Have you heard about one of the things, the rules that they've changed?
After innings, they're going to put a man on second.
Yeah, it was a guy that, with the way it works, my understanding is the last guy to get an out, you'll put him on second base. It won't count again. If a run is scored, it will not count against the pitcher. I think, is it something like an error, Bubba? Something to that effect, I heard this morning.
I don't know how it will be scored, but yeah, it's basically, it sounds very similar, if not the same, as the international tiebreaker that's used a lot of times in softball. I don't like it, to be honest. I didn't realize until I read the article that it had been used in recent years in minor league baseball. That shows you how much I've followed minor league baseball over the last few years, hopefully it'll go back to a typical baseball game and the way it's been done since the game's been in existence, pretty much starting next year with the 2021 season.
Now, what is the point of doing this right now? Just to, because they're playing so 60 games and put a short amount of time to solid. Okay,
they're trying to shorten the game, and also one of the things that they've done, Bubba and Kyle, as you know, they've had the pitch clock. I'm not really a fan of that, but they're trying to shorten the game. And, hey, ladies and gentlemen, we got him now. Bubba, we got one of your favorite players of all time.
Dave.
Yeah, I know. I see. We had him for a couple seconds, and as soon as I put him up on the board, up on the screen.
Put him audio only. Bubba, how do you join audio only like you're doing?
Or, yeah, if you can see if you can do that.
I just clicked the link, and then I'm not using the video because I'm in the car, but I'll see if he can join via his cell phone.
Okay.
All right. But anyway, Kyle, as far as the baseball, one of the things that they have been doing recently is to have the clock. It's like 25 or 30 seconds like you would in basketball with a shot clock, or as far as the play clock for football. Yeah. And to shorten the game, there's some folks in sports talk have been talking about that. Why not go ahead and put that in? It's a short season. It's a busted season anyway. It gives you a chance to play around with the rules a little bit. Do you like the pitch clock?
Well, you know, I honestly don't have too much of an opinion on it. I can understand them trying to shorten the game. And, well, it's not so much shorten the game as it is do away with dead time where there's nothing going on.
Right.
How long is the pitch clock? Is it 25 seconds or
something like that? 25 or 30. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's fine. It doesn't bother me either way. I mean, if they want to do it, it's fine. If not, don't. I mean, I understand the logic behind it.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with that. That's something that a lot of folks probably don't even realize it because it's not posted at the stadium, you know, like a shot clock in basketball, but that's in place in college baseball. And really, I mean, if a pitcher is working efficiently and it's on the same page with the catcher getting signs and however that team goes about signaling their pitches in, whether it's a catcher signaling in or in East Carolina's case, a lot of times, you know, this year they went to the wristband with Jason Dietrich and calling that out. But it really should be a non-issue if a pitcher is working efficiently, in my opinion.
Now, does the pitch clock start once he steps on the – can he step off the mound? Will that restart the pitch clock? Or?
Honestly, I'm not sure how that's
I don't think you can do that. Okay. I don't think – not that – to my knowledge, I've never heard them allowing that. I've never seen the rule specifically, so I'll say that. But I've never seen it where they allow it where a guy steps off and it starts all over and then, you know, where you could potentially have, 50 seconds or a minute. I think it's
if you really aren't sure what you want to pitch, just throw over.
Yeah. Yeah, you can. All right. Let's see. I think we got him now. Let's try again. Maybe the third time's a charm. Francisco Cabrera. I think we got him now. Hey, how are you?
Good. How you doing?
Good. I'm glad to have you. I know Bubba, I told you earlier the 92 game, I think Bubba was like 11 years old. He didn't sleep for a while, but I think he might not. After talking to you tonight, he probably won't sleep for 2 or 3 days as an adult.
Yeah, I hear you, Dave. Now, yeah, it certainly was a very exciting time to be a Braves fan for sure after a lot of years where the Braves hadn't had a whole lot of success, and that was – year two of 15 straight division titles. And so, Francisco, before we dive into that 1992 NLCS, and just tell folks and tell our listeners and viewers about your path into the game of baseball and how you eventually made it to the big leagues.
Well, you know, first of all, I want to say hello to everybody, all those people who are watching us right now. And tell you that when I started playing baseball, I was just thinking to make to professional, you know, not to go to the big league, just to be professional because I love baseball at that time. And then when I signed, everything went like very quick, 4 years, and I'd be in the big league. Then I was like, wow, it is good. It's beautiful to be here. So I wanted to stay in the big league longer, but you know how things happen.
Yeah.
And you come from a country that has produced a lot of great players over the years, the Dominican Republic. In the Dominican, I know you told me you're back home there. How is life after? We'll talk about baseball, but how are you doing right? How are things now for you?
Well, really is not good. Is people right now scare a lot for the disease, you know, and a lot of people dying and a lot of people right now sick. So I think that this year is one of the baddest years that I ever have in my life.
Wow. I'm sorry to hear that, Francisco. How is COVID being treated down in the Dominican? Is the outbreak bad down there? And how is medical care down there?
Well, you know, here is a lot of people that are still sick, you know, trying to recover. And there are a lot of people already die. So we are scared to go out. We have what you call it when you stay home and don't go out.
Quarantine.
You know, and we have to. Yeah, so we have to, 8 o'clock curfew, cannot go out, you know. So it's like you're in jail. You cannot do anything, you know, and you cannot throw anybody. And I'm just waiting to that all those things happen and pass so we can give a hug, you know, and shake hands because really, I don't feel really good being like that And so I know a lot of people wanted to do the same thing.
So you can confirm it is affecting the Dominican Republic to all the Americans out there that think it's a scam because of the elections. It is affecting other countries.
Yes, thank you, Kyle.
Yeah, the election's coming. And a lot of people say they're going to go to vote. And really, I'm not the one that's going to do that. I'm not the one that's going to do that. Because you know how those the COVID-19, that is not something that I want to find in my way. So, but people have to go. They need to elect a new president, or even though do the same thing for the one that they're still there. So I'm not too good of a policy. You know, I'm just playing baseball.
As far as baseball goes, how are you feeling about, I told you before we came on earlier, before we started the show, about the 60-game baseball season. I know that you played in the league a number of years, being a former player. Are you happy, or at least we're going to have some kind of season? 60 games really is not a lot.
Well, you know, I wanted to hope that we could play. I mean, that they could play the whole games, you know, starting from the beginning, you know, like always. But because the COVID-19, everything changed. So I really don't feel so good about, you know, the situation is going on right now, that the owners and the players discussion, you know, because everything they had to do because the fans, you know, play baseball for the fans. So they always thinking about like what they gonna make, you know, what they gonna get, and never think the other persons. I mean, like the fans, that without fans you don't have no game. So you need to, you know, be a little bit more, how do you say that word? They're supposed to think better, think more about the things.
Yeah, certainly with baseball. One of the things, Francisco, that I'm worried about is certainly I hope that it does not happen. So it's not like I want it to happen. But with collective bargaining coming up next year, I'm praying that we won't see a strike in 21. That would be terrible after we finally have a deal for this year.
Yeah, yeah. I hope it not happen either because I remember 2004 was. There was a strike.
94.
Yeah. I went to Japan. Then when I come back, I wanted to play in United States. I have a chance to play with the Braves that year. But because of strike, and I don't want to break the strike, I had to go to AAA if I want to continue to play. And then I wasn't doing too good in AAA, and then I got released there. If it wasn't a strike, I would have started in the big league, and maybe things would have been different, you know. They were supposed to give a chance to the player plan. They promised them that they're not going to release them, so they let them play in AAA, and I was one of the guys who was making good money with a split contract, so they released me. And let the other guys, like the replacement players.
That's great.
So I don't know. Right now, most people, they need to be playing because the COVID-19, they're not feeling it. So when they come next year and it's a strike, and then it's going to be trouble because they're not going to be ready for baseball, and it's not good.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think in 94, the strike really hurt baseball, and it didn't recover until 98. And I think a strike again would really be devastating. And Bubba, did you want to get into the 92 season?
Yeah, before we talk about 92, I know before those four-plus seasons you spent with the Atlanta Braves, you actually made your big league debut coming up with the Blue Jays, who were very, very good during that time. So talk about that, and then how you eventually made that transition over to the Atlanta organization.
Francisco, can you hear Bubba?
He hears.
What? Yeah.
Did you hear Bubba's
question? I can hear you.
Yeah, he was asking about, Bubba, can you ask him again?
Yeah, absolutely. Francisco, obviously you spent four-plus seasons with the Atlanta Braves from 1989 to 1993, but prior to coming over to the Braves, you actually made your big league debut with the Toronto Blue Jays, who were very good during those years. So talk about the time you spent with the Blue Jays and then that transition over to the Atlanta Braves, right, as the Braves were starting to become the team of the 90s.
Yeah, see, I was doing very good with the Blue Jay. Epi Guerrero was the one that signed me that time, and he gave me a lot of confidence when I first started. I know that if I want to still like play with the Blue Jay when they bring me up, probably it will be different history. Because maybe I would have more chance to play and I would do more than what I did. But when I got traded to the Braves, I feel good there too. First, I was a little bit weird because, you know, young guy, you know, being traded, it never happened to me, nothing like that. First, feel a little bit weird. But then everything is coming along, you know, a lot of friends, good friends. And a lot of things happened to me there. I remember now. So I was happy. I wish that I could have more chance to play and do more, but I don't have that many chances to play.
Can you talk about your time in Atlanta? Can you talk about maybe a favorite story you have, a favorite restaurant? The fans are great. It's certainly a baseball town in Atlanta. Can you talk about some fun times there with the Braves fans or maybe Atlanta?
Well, you know, to me, all the fans are very good to me. I say hello to everybody. But Atlanta fans are very great because they enjoy very much baseball, especially when they hold the summer hat, you know, and do all the stuff that they do in their time. It make us like a warrior, you know, like we got to do it. You know, the fans asking, we got to do it. So the fans over there is like a little bit different than the other places. You know, it make you feel like you're home, you know. So I think you're one of the best fans are in Atlanta. And I have good restaurants. We go there all the time. They have my picture there. It's Golden Buddha. I think it's Chinese restaurant, something like that. It's someplace in there. I don't remember the address correctly, but we went over there to eat. And the owners is very, very friend of mine, you know, and pretty, very nice. Also, I have a lot of friends around there. And I miss it very much, Atlanta. I wish I can live there because I think there's a very good city to leave.
I know about not about it. You're one of the favorites, certainly. Hey, Bubba, I know one of the things you said is that there are people that said that Sid Bream, that he was actually out, but you think he was safe in 92?
Yeah, our good friend Mike Mullis, Mully, when I was telling him about you coming on, Francisco, he said, that's awesome. He said, that's a great get. He said, glad you're going to have him on the show, but he was out. So obviously talking about that, what was the winning run with Sid Bream. But Francisco, take us back to, October of 1992. Stan Belinda's on the mound. The Braves are trailing the Pirates 2-1. And you had David Justice on third with the tying run. And then Sid Bream on second with what was the winning run. So take us through that at bat the best you can. And so forth, and just walk us through that tremendous memory.
Well, first of all, let me tell you that I thought that he was out first, and then when I watched the replays, I saw he was safe. So I said, we did it. So anyway, you know, when I was in the bullpen, I was like warm up the pitchers in the bullpen. I was thinking the whole time, the pitcher, Doc Rivera, he was a great pitcher, would throw a lot of breaking ball. So I was starting him from the bullpen because I know that sometime I have the opportunity to go pinch it in the eighth, ninth inning. So I was preparing my head, you know, mentally prepared. So I was thinking if I had the opportunity to go and hit, I got to look for a pitch, like a hanging, breaking pitch, like bell high, you know, and I'm going to stay back and drive it to the middle. That's what I was thinking there and watching, like, the motion, everything he do when he pitch. But when they called me up to hit, and I was really focused, you know, I was like, concentrate. When I get there, then they come up, they call up Stan Belinda to pitch. So when I saw that he come, then I had to change my plan. The kid, and I said, wow, this is a different pitcher. You know, he's a fastball here, a pitcher with a good sinker. But it was good for me because I used to hit against him, and I was doing good every time I hit against him. So I was relaxed. Then I said, I have a better chance with him right now. So this is the guy that I need to hit. So I went over there and I said, I'm not going to be anxious. I need to be a little bit patient. So I was patient. Take the first pitch, ball. Second pitch, ball. Then I looked at third base and I was like, wow, this is an opportunity for me to hit a ball out of the ballpark. And look at Jimmy Williams over there. And he would say, hit, don't take. But I was like thinking, hey, two ball, no strike. Tie run in third base. I should be taking. But I said, also, if you're going to hit, I'm going to swing hard. If I hit it, I'm going to hit it good. If it's fair ball, it got to be a home run. And if it's, I get jammed, it had to be foul ball. So I pulled the ball, almost hit out of the ballpark, left field. And I was angry because I missed. So the next day I know, I don't even have a chance to think. It was a fastball right down in the outside corner, like throw in, and I swing, and I get a base hit. So everything was like victory. I don't remember anything else. I was jumping in first base. I see Sebring sliding home, and they went safe. I was happy the first because I thought I tied the game. But then when he scored the winning run, I said, wow, I did it. So I'm a hero now.
Francisco, we actually have a viewer that wants to make a comment. Johnny Gardner Mudcats were an affiliate of the Pittsburgh Pirates at that time. He said he was working a booth at the State Fair during that time, had more Braves fans come up and talk smack to us about the big league battle. Mm-hmm. Once the late great Jim Graham, he was commissioner of agriculture, and he said that the Pirates don't sign my check and I'm a long life Yankee fan. So,
and that was a heck of a, that Pittsburgh, that Pittsburgh team, that was Barry Bonds and Bobby Bonilla and Doug Drayback. And that's a good team.
Yeah. Bonds was on. Yep. Barry Bonds.
I'm the best light. Yeah.
A thin Barry Bonds at the time.
Yeah. Andy Van
Yeah. They have a great team.
Yeah. One of the best Pirate teams, certainly.
We go to the playoff. I go to the playoff all the time, I guess.
Yeah. They did, Darlene. Do you, one question I had for you, Francisco, are you coaching at all back home in the Dominican? Because I just feel like talking to you, you'd make a great coach and bringing more kids up for baseball.
Yeah. Right now, we don't do anything because of the situation.
Right.
We're closed right now. But we working, I'm working with the kids, 12, 11 years old, to prepare them to get signed at 16 and a half age, July 2nd. So I work with them in teaching so they can have the opportunity to be signed for one of the big league teams.
That will be, that's awesome. And certainly, again, your country is known for producing a lot of great baseball players, including yourself and many others. Over the years, I can't imagine baseball without a player from the Dominican. It's a great thing. As far as baseball, are there any rule changes? I know they proposed the one of the things in the past, the pitch clock. One thing they're going to do this year as far as extra innings, they're going to put a player on at second base. Have you heard about these rule changes?
Yeah, I hear about that. And especially this one weird one that, like, when you have, I think it's that three balls, something like that, or two strides, something like that, and you walk with one pitch or something like that, and then you run to first base, and you start in first base. You hear that one?
No, I haven't heard that one.
What is it?
Like you have two strike, right? And you throw a pitch, one pitch, and you go to first and you save. It's like you start first base.
Oh, like in college baseball.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's the rule for college baseball. So they're putting that in Major League Baseball this year.
Well, I don't know what's going to happen this year. This year is a year that a lot of things happen.
Do you have any idea or your thoughts? I know it's a short season. Are there teams that they have your eye as far as a chance to win the World Series?
You know, this season, if they play, it's going to be very complicated. The people are not going to be so concentrated like they should be. Because they're going to have a lot of things in their mind. You know, they're going to worry about a lot the COVID-19, and they're going to worry about a lot of things and not going to be focused when they play. Because a lot of things going on this year. So hopefully everything worked out good, because like fans need to see something. And the fans love baseball, and even they can see it through the TV. They're going to enjoy it very much. But I know that they don't want to the players to get sick either. So But anyway, I think that this year is going to be a little bit difficult. Is what I'm going to say.
Hey, I have a question for you. Will you sign Bubba's hat? You see, he's got a Braves hat on. Will you sign his hat, Francisco?
Yes, I do.
Now, Francisco, one of the things I wanted to ask you, just talk about the culture during those years with the Braves. Obviously, throughout the 80s, before you had joined the organization, the Braves had really struggled, and they'd been losing 100 games, and then they went to winning right around 100 games or in excess of 100 games. So just talk about the culture that from John Schuerholz on down through Bobby Cox, Leo Mazzoni, you mentioned Jimmy Williams. So just talk about what the clubhouse is like and all the great players and personalities you had on the team then.
You know, I think that Schuerholz, along with Bobby Cox and Lancaster, which was the president at that time, they conferred a very good team. Young guys, a lot of prospects. And they'd be losing a lot of games, but they were like getting ready to have a good team to compete in their did an excellent job. We play as a union, you know. We have a lot of good pitchers and defense. That was the first thing we had to make us win a lot of games. Because you remember, you see the team, it's like, well, this team is not the team that hit a lot of home runs and hitting everybody 300 and something like that. But they have good defense, they have good pitching, and good manager, you know, good staff, coaching staff. And we are very union, you know. So I think this is one of the keys that make us win a lot of games.
Yeah, during those years, so you mentioned the pitching and the defense. Here recently I watched an excellent interview series of interviews actually with Leo Mazzoni, and he was a tremendous character. I know a lot of those things that happen behind the scenes, they need to stay behind the scenes. I'm being a former athlete myself at the college level, but just do you have a story that maybe you can share? As far as that goes, as far as something that maybe happened, whether it's in the dugout, locker room, I mean, nothing bad. I mean, just maybe a cool story that somebody may not have known about just because it happened behind the scenes.
Well, you know, really is a lot of things that happen behind the scenes all the time, but which is behind the scenes, stay behind the scenes. So I don't talk about those kind of stuff. But
locker room talk.
The thing I can say is Leo Mazzoni, they call him like the guy who do this too much. He moving like he was nervous all the time. But see, he was just a guy a little bit hyper, you know, that he is a very good pitching coach. You know, he do a lot of things differently. There are a lot of pitching coach. It's like he got his pitchers in throw bullpen almost every day. Not too much. Like they need to warm up, we turn the bullpen, which is a good because it give you a lot of control, you know, so you can be a better pitcher throwing the song. So that was one of the things that I think that made Cobos pitcher being a good pitcher with the throwing strike. And the pitcher who throws a strike, you know, they're the pitchers who are going to win a lot of games. So Leo Mazzoni, to me, one of the best pitching coach, great person, you know. Everybody was good person, and I'm talking about the way he treated those pitchers like they're their son. And me as a catcher, the bullpen, you know, I pass a lot of time with him. Also, Nate Jobs, when he was there too, we talk a lot, and he gave me a lot of advice, you know, and when I was young. And I appreciate all that. That's why I was always ready and focused in the game.
Who was the talk about behind the scenes? Who was the biggest ladies' man on the team during those days? Was it Justin?
Well, you know, I really don't know.
Safe answer.
I don't know if he's private life. I don't know what he do after that. After he's get out of the game, you know, during the game we pass a good time and everything. But after the game, he goes somewhere and I go my way. So I don't know what he do or what everybody do. I'm not the guy who like to go out. While I have my wife that time there, and my way is like get out of the ballpark and go home, stay with the kid, you know, and give a good example. I don't drink a lot either, you know. I could take you maybe a beer or something like that, and if we have a party with the team, so it's the time when I maybe have two or three beers, but I'm the kind of guy that not like to blow around too much.
Gotcha.
Francisco, I had a question as far as a lot of respect and love of the game. And, man, Bobby Cox, one of the greatest managers of all time. What was it like playing for Bobby Cox?
Yeah. Well, you know, I have him in Toronto before. You know, that he come from Toronto to the Bay. So I think that was the reason why he's scouting me when they traded, because that time he was general manager. And then Tony Castillo, he was trading for Gene Acker, and I was the player to be named later. So I figured that was because Bobby Cox selected me because he was there. Like he selected Ellie Week one time when he was playing there too. And he's, I think, the guy who it was concentrated in everything he do. You know, he treat all the players nice. You know, I think he's one of the nicest managers I ever play with. And I have a lot of managers that I play with that are nice. But see, I think that I'm the kind of person to get along with everybody. So I don't have a biased story about manager. To me, every managers are good. Now, I do have one manager. Used to manage the Dodgers and also Boston. Grady Little, remember him? He was the one in Triple A. In spring training, I was hitting like 400 something with wow. The strike, and when it was open. The big league, Bobby Cox said, Francisco, you're going to stay here. And then he said, no, 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 no. He's going to be my number four hitter in Triple A. And when you guys going to play in big league, then you call him up. And I was happy. I never thought that's going to be hurt me. And I said, okay. But when I went to Triple A, I went over there to be a DH. In the cold weather. So I couldn't hit in this first month, you know, and then that's when I got released. So I don't have more chance to play. And it was difficult for me to hit in the cold weather as a DH when I used to be playing every day in the minor league. It's the only place that I've been pinch hit, it was in the big league. And it's different. Big league's different all the time. You know, you have time to get ready and put yourself in shape. So,
I'm sorry, Francisco. Johnny Gardner had a question. He said he had a relationship with him. Can Francisco speak of Andrew Jones and his run?
Andrew Jones?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, well. Andrew Jones, he's a very nice person. And I knew him when he was young. And then we see each other when I go to to the Braves celebration in August every year. This year is not going to be, I think, the way it's been going. But that's the way that we have more relation, because I don't have time to see him before, because he went to the big league when I went out. So we don't pass time to get, but we are a very good friend. He's a nice person, and it's good to be close to him.
How many of the former players on your team or Braves in general do you keep in contact with?
Well, Alejandro Pena, Belliard, Marvin Friedman, Steve Avery, Dave Justice. I don't remember right now, but see, I have a Dwayne Henry. You know, he used to play for Houston before we played with the Braves together.
Glavin or Smoltz?
Smoltz, nah. We don't really have a way to contact.
Okay. Well, I know he's been doing a lot of broadcasting, certainly here lately on Fox for sure. I was, Francisco, I was amazed at seeing like the numbers for Bubba. You saw the article. It was primarily about sports contracts, but they had a number today, and the number escapes me. But the number, as far as amount of money that Turner Sports is paying for Major League Baseball, just blew my mind. You remember that, Bubba, the article I sent you?
Yeah, I hadn't had a chance to check it out yet, Dave.
It was a multi-million dollar, obviously several hundred million dollars, I think, for a year. It was incredible for the rights for baseball. Not that baseball doesn't deserve it. It was just the number was really, really high, higher than I expected.
It's a lot of money.
No doubt about it. Well, Francisco, how can fans of yours stay in touch with you? Do you stay on social media, or how can people get in contact with you?
Well, a lot of people contact me by Facebook. Now I have
Instagram,
but Messenger. Yeah. And really, I don't know how they find me, because I'm not really the guy who be showing my face a lot in Facebook or those places. But one way or the other one, they find me, they contact me.
Yeah. Johnny Garter said, Julio Franco, I saw him play for the Peninsula Pilots when I was an elementary kid. He played forever.
Yeah, Julio Franco, he's my friend. We played for the Estrella Orientales over here. We played together. And he's very, very nice person. Give you a lot of advice to the young boys. So. My kind of guy.
Good deal.
Well, Francis, as far as Julio Franco, when I think of Julio, I think of that batting stance, and then I also think of just he played until he was 48 years old, which, I mean, it's not like – I mean, that's just unbelievable.
Yeah, you know, one day I was in the slum, and I was played Estrella against the Azucarero, La Romana, the team La Romana. And I imitated him, and I said, I'm going to hit like Julio Franco today. And you know what? I got two home runs. And then the paper the next day said, Francisco Cabrera got two home runs, hitting just like Julio Franco.
Oh, man. Well, Francisco, thank you so much for your time. Please stay safe there in the Dominican. You are a great person, great player, and an honor to have you on. I know you made Bubba's maybe decade or maybe a century. I don't know, but thank you so much for coming on.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it. You guys invite me.
Absolutely. God bless. All right. Bye-bye.
Say hello to all the friends.
How we doing? All right. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Wow, that was really cool. What a great show with two great guests. I know our good friend Mike Mullis would certainly talk about how great the guests are, like he normally does. Appreciate you, Mully, very much. 5-star virtual. Want to give him a shout out. Kyle, I know that very excited to I'm happy to hear they're going to have at the stadium this year AC/DC with some band with the with the dance music for sure.
Yeah, let's hope not. I mean, nothing against the still life, but you know, we would like to see as I told Eric Ward, just, you know, let's play AC/DC. We don't need the dance mix version.
No doubt. Well, I'm just happy the fact that we're at a point where hopefully we'll not a jinx it, but August 29th, that's where my mindset is. Are you going to tell this year, Kyle?
I never tell, man. I get to the stadium and go in pretty soon after I get there. I normally like to get in the stadium pretty early.
How early do you get it?
I was going to say
2 hours before kickoff, maybe three.
That'd be a good question for John Gilbert, Ryan Robinson here in the next month or so, whenever we have them back on, as far as all those game day logistics and how that's going to be handled. But yeah. But no, I just wanted to say thanks again to Eric Ward for coming on. He was a great guest, and that's why he actually already reached back out to us, guys, and said thank you for having me on. I really enjoyed it, and please pass along my thanks to Dave and Kyle. So I told him we'd definitely get him back on during the season, and we'll talk about how things are going, and hopefully we've made a lot of progress by then, and we're playing football and having some fans in the stands and so forth, but we'll have him back on there sometime in October probably to talk about marketing as it pertains to East Carolina basketball.
And obviously he loves, I love the fact that Coach Houston loves the 80s hair metal. I grew up during that time. He and I think he's a couple years older than me, but definitely loved to, I think one of my favorite parts, I think I told you guys this, but one of my favorite parts of the Mo era was when we were getting clobbered by a team and all of a sudden they played "We're Not Gonna Take It" by Twisted Sister.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're not gonna take it anymore.
With the exception of the win over North Carolina and BYU, my favorite part of the Mo era was when it was over.
Oh, well, no doubt. No doubt about it. You guys, I know let's talk about, we've got, what, one more week, Bubba, left of our sweepstakes for season tickets?
I think we ought to extend it.
Yeah. At the very least, it'll go up through June 30th, like Kyle said. We'll see how it's going. We may extend it out into July.
Okay.
But yeah, the way we're giving those two East Carolina football season tickets away is just go on to our Twitter at @esportsobj. And we have it pinned there, a pinned tweet detailing the contest and four different ways you can put your name into the hat. Follow us there, retweet it, like it. That's one way. Follow us, like us, and share it on our Facebook page. And that's the second way. And then the other two ways are simply to subscribe to our YouTube channel, screenshot that, and send it to us on Facebook or Twitter under those pinned tweet and post. And then also wherever you listen to the show, whether it's TuneIn Radio, Audio Boom, SoundCloud, you name it, screenshot that proof that you subscribe to the show, and we'll put your name in the hat a fourth time. So that will be at least, guess what, a week from now, if not a little bit longer.
Yeah, and if you didn't get all that, just go to our Facebook page and you can read the rules of how to play.
Yeah.
And Bubba, we've got some great shows coming up. I want to give you an opportunity to promote those before we get out of here.
Yeah, we really do, Dave. On some of the upcoming shows, Actually, tomorrow we're doing it the traditional way. We're catching up with Randall Hill, Miami Hurricanes Hall of Fame wide receiver. You think back to the U if you've watched those 30 for 30s, a two-part series on the U. Randall Hill was the wide receiver catching balls and then dancing in the end zone and having the commentators say, I don't think the other team's going to like that. And so we'll talk to Randall. He's actually in politics now down there in the Miami area. In the state of Florida. So we'll catch up with Randall and reminisce about those times with the U. And then we'll also catch up with Steve Robertson. He's with Mississippi State's 24/7 site. We've had him on the show at least twice, maybe three times before. I know we had him on, I think the most recent time was after Mike Leach was hired. So we'll have Steve on to talk about the controversy going on with the flag down there in the state of Mississippi, and also just talk a little football and how things are going with Coach Leach. Considering he and the staff, like most people, didn't get a spring practice, and see how things are progressing as the fall is approaching. And then also on Thursday night, 7 p.m. on Facebook and YouTube, we'll have Charles Arbuckle, former UCLA tight end, college football analyst, and then also former East Carolina wide receiver Marcellus Harris. Marcellus played for the Pirates from 97 to 2000. And I know, Kyle, you often reference that Syracuse game in the rain in 2000 when we won 34-17. I'm pretty sure Marcellus may have caught a deep ball in that one early on from David Garrard going towards what is now the Murphy Center. But those are a couple of our upcoming shows. Of course, on Friday night, we'll have trivia at 7 o'clock. Next week, we'll have an ECU wrestling show. As of right now, that will be on Tuesday on Facebook and YouTube at 7 o'clock again on June the 30th. And then probably next Thursday, July the 2nd. We haven't had Dr. John Bream on since mid April. So we'll have John on and talk about everything going on with teams returning to play and some questions about COVID-19 now that we're kind of into a different phase of the virus.
And we have a special guest. We're going to have Jim Cornette, and that'll be two to be determined where we're going to have him on.
Still working on that name. But yeah. Corny was in the news. I don't know if you saw that.
I didn't. No.
Oh yeah, he was accused. We'll talk about it off the air.
Okay, I didn't know about that. I would have mentioned if I had known. All right, want to thank our great guest Eric Ward, and certainly I want to thank Francisco Cabrera. And what did you have anything before we go, Bubba?
Last thing I was going to add, in the month of July, so we'll be catching up with new East Carolina defensive coordinator Blake Carroll, hopefully offensive coordinator Donnie Kirkpatrick, and then several other guests. Phil Steele joined the program last year. Obviously, this year he's been up against it with not having a spring ball. And so Phil, actually, I know I forwarded this to you, Kyle, because you were talking about pre-ordering it, and I think you probably already did that. But no. If you want to buy the Phil Steele magazine, it's going to be in Barnes & Noble. I think he reached an agreement with Barnes & Noble to have that out there. And I want to say that's July 24th that it will be in stores. Wow. So Phil Steele will be coming up sometime in the middle or end of the month. And that was an absolutely huge show for us last year.
Yeah, it looks like Phil Steele this year will be Barnes & Noble or
PhilSteele.com.
Or PhilSteele.com to order it. Or, of course, I'm sure it will be available digitally through your Android and Apple stores, as it has been the last couple of years. But interesting that he's had to rush and distributing and everything else has been in a pinch for him. But it's weird for him, just like everything else is weird these days.
That's the norm right now. No doubt about it. All right, guys. Thank you, Kyle. Thank you, Bubba. Thank you to our great guests. Thank you to our viewers and listeners. And you've been listening and watching The Sports Objective. Good night, everybody, and go Pirates.
You've been listening to The Sports Objective Podcast. Join us next time as the guys will be objective, and the objective is sports.